I'm Dream Queen. You're in the cab with me, listening to KMRD LP. We've been in a book club, A Knock at Midnight, inspiration from the great sermons of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. I would add, doctor. He spent a long time in school and had a PhD. All right, so today's sermon is called Why Jesus Called a Man a Fool. And as we chose this book, I'm just going to fill in people who might be new to the show here that we started the book club with All About Love from Bell Hooks. Then we were shown the way to Reverend Martin Luther King Jr.'s sermons, this collection here, given that we are in a state of perpetual wars in our country and that people are still suffering at the hands of tyranny and economic oppression, straight up bombs, straight up violence all over from everybody. The world is just amok. And it's amok in a way that is painful because due to technologies that we have at our fingertips that allow us to do so much more harm at such a more rapid pace than I think has ever been possible historically. And Dr. King covered a myriad of topics that have to do with our social system and it's what we could do to be better human beings and raise ourselves up to a better standard of living for everyone based on compassion and bravery, courage to speak truth to power, and call out injustice. He was a preacher of the Gospels, of those who witnessed and heard the words of Jesus. Now, I know we're all here. Many of us have different relationships to the story of the Christ, whether you believe as a real person that walked, Yeshua ben Joseph, whoever you want to call by name. If you've been abused and manipulated by organized religion, we've been covering that here too. It's sort of intertwined. Again, it's tourist season. I know some of you are just tuning in for the first time, so I'm just covering where we're at. We're about healing the wounds that are put in place by the evangelicals that have hurt people in this country over the centuries. And we want to decolonize our spirits, is what I've been called to do here. As people, you know, have been talking to me about what do we do about the situation. I'd love to do something about the situation. So the excerpt I'm going to read is on the second page of this sermon, page 146 of the book. This speech is delivered at Mount Pisgah Missionary Baptist Church in Chicago, Illinois, the 27th of August, 1967. Okay. I did not come to Mount Pisgah to give a civil rights address. I have to do a lot of that. I have to make numerous civil rights speeches. But before I was a civil rights leader, I was a preacher of the gospel. This was my first calling, and it still remains my greatest commitment. You know, actually, all that I do in civil rights, I do because I consider it a part of my ministry. I have no other ambitions in life but to achieve excellence in the Christian ministry. I don't plan to run for any political office. I don't plan to do anything but remain a preacher. And what I'm doing in this struggle, along with many others, grows out of my feeling that the preacher must be concerned about the whole man, not merely his soul, but his body. It's all right to talk about heaven. I talk about it because I believe firmly in immortality, but you've got to talk about the earth. It's all right to talk about long white robes over yonder, but I want a suit and some shoes to wear down here. It's all right to talk about the streets flowing with milk and honey in heaven, but I want some food to eat down here. It's even all right to talk about the New Jerusalem, But one day we must begin to talk about the new Chicago, the new Atlanta, the new New York, the new America. And any religion that professes to be concerned about the souls of men and is not concerned about the slums that cripple the souls, the economic conditions that stagnate the soul, and the city governments that may damn the soul, is a dry, dead, do-nothing religion. I didn't say that. Dr. King said that. As we look at this book, this collection of very thoughtful words, like I said, Dr. King was very well educated and is a very thoughtful man. And he had a lot of time, not only in his offices and in his home to think and write, but in jail cells, solitary confinement, where he wrote Letter from Birmingham Jail. Very thoughtful, prayerful person. And I think about, you know, all the reasons that he was shot down and taken from us. People wanted him to run for political office. And as you know, you just heard in his own words, that's not a calling that he felt he needed to do or respond to. He was not called to do that. But I think a lot of people, a lot of politicians were still very intimidated, obviously, by the presence and words of this person, this preacher. And when we are looking at the conflict in the Middle East over land, passages, resources, and how they put the spirituality part right in front to trip people up. And Dr. King, these conflicts are not new to us, even though they've escalated so much right before our eyes in the past year. But Dr. King's time, there is still Israel and Palestine. There's still trouble all over the continent known as Africa, all over South America, all over India. King talks about this, and our involvement in these things and capitalism's brutality on the earth and on human life. I think that Dr. King was probably the foremost voice for justice and Christianity. And as we bring his words to the front here in the middle of a very pronounced struggle for American values, okay? So let's talk about that for a second. And I'm gonna go into it a little bit more. I'm sorry, y'all. I'm like kind of fleshing out some things in my head. You know, I watched a little YouTube about something called Project 2025. Some of you may have heard about this. It was sort of new to me. And I'm on their website right now, project2025.org. Building now for a conservative victory through policy, personnel, and training. And it's basically a handbook for the conservative right and how they would like to train the next conservative president. This is a well-known document. It's a book. It's over 940 pages. That's just volume one that talks about the policy agenda for the conservative state. I personally right now feel like it's a distraction because we are obviously if you go to the homepage, they talk about the liberal government that's in place right now. I think we have a totalitarian government in place right now. I think we've just pretty much got the same values of make America great again is sitting firmly where they've always sat. liberal and conservative become more synonymous as we watch genocide happen in real time with our tax dollars. So the buzzwords about American values, family values, you know, First Amendment rights, which we are rapidly losing. I'm worried about every word that comes out of my mouth right here. We're talking about the conservative agenda to make war on woke, which is just funny to me because American history, I'm not anti-American. I'm anti-fascist. I'm anti-genocide. I'm anti-war. I'm not anti the idea of what this country could be. So when we're looking at these conservative values and what that means to certain people, the dog whistles that we know about, does conservative means all white government of men in a heteronormative income bracket, everybody else is a serving class. Like, that's what they want to get back to. And many of us are working to liberate because we deserve equal rights, all people on this planet, period. And people have been fighting for their own liberation throughout the history of America. You and I just happen to be sitting here right now, and it's our turn to pick a side. So I'm not going to be dragged into a holy war without really dissecting what the people who tell me that they're holy are even all about, you know? So Dr. King has a good idea of what he thinks a good Christian is. And he's taking from the parable of when Jesus called a man a fool. And the story is from the book of Luke. And it's about a man who, according to King, by all standards, would be a well-to-do person. He's so successful, his crops were so bountiful that he didn't know what to do with them. He had so much bounty, was so prosperous that he thought, I need to build a new and bigger barn to store my goods in. I'm going to store my goods and my fruit there, and then I'm going to say to my soul, soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. Maybe on a space balloon, you know? Why not? You got so much. Just take a vacation to the stratosphere and have a $500,000 lunch. But the parable doesn't end with that man making his statement. Dr. King continues, it ends by saying that God said to him, thou fool, not next year, not next week, not tomorrow, but this night, thy soul is required of thee. And Dr. King goes on to explain in a different parable that we've heard before in previous chapters that Jesus is not against wealth. And King reaches back into the Old Testament and about the wealth of Abraham. And, you know, it's about what we do with the wealth. So King continues, I'd like for you to look at this parable with me and try to decipher the real reason that Jesus called this man a fool. Number one, Jesus called this man a fool because he allowed the means by which he lived to outdistance the ends for which he lived. You see, each of us lives in two realms, the within and the without. Now, the within of our lives is that realm of spiritual ends expressed in art, literature, religion, and morality. The without of our lives is that complex of devices, of mechanisms and instrumentalities by means of which we live. The house we live in, that's part of the means by which we live. The car we drive, the clothes we wear, the money that we are able to accumulate. In short, the physical stuff that's necessary for us to exist. Now, the problem is that we always must keep a line of demarcation between the two. This man was a fool because he didn't do that. And I skip to the bottom of the page. He looked at suffering humanity and wasn't concerned about it. He probably gave his wife mink coats, a convertible automobile, but he didn't give her what she needed most, love and affection. He probably provided bread for his children, but he didn't give them any attention. He didn't really love them. So that's the idea. There are 3 points to this sermon. Point number one, consolidation of wealth and not being concerned about the suffering of your fellow human being. Many people call that the bootstraps. As we go into point number two and point number three, it'll become clear that it's not just that this person who accumulated all this wealth had no concern to be charitable. That is one part of it, for sure. Now, number two, Dr. King writes, this man was a fool because he failed to realize his dependence on others. Now, if you read that parable in the book of Luke, you will discover that this man utters about 60 words. And do you know, in 60 words, he said, I and my, more than 15 times. This man was a fool because he said, I and my, so much until he lost the capacity to say we and our. He failed to realize that he couldn't do anything by himself. This man talked like he could build the barns by himself, like he could till the soil by himself, and he failed to realize that wealth is always a result of the commonwealth. And then King goes into all of our items in our life, from the sponge or cloth that we may use to wash ourselves, to the bread that we may be eating, to the cup of tea or coffee, and how before we finished eating breakfast in the morning, we've been dependent on more than half the world. And it's just such a great point. It's one of the things I love about living out here in rural America. It's when I first got here, before I started laboring, I would hear people say, I built my house. And then they'd ask me to come out and do some work. And I go over there and I'm like, you built this all by yourself? And then realize that when people say I built my house, you know, it's a way of speaking that really does. It's part of our culture. It's part of our language. I am my. Something about that individualism and capitalism. I did this. And there are some houses that I've been to and I've watched, you know, I watched a community member build a shed, a small shed by himself out there. And it looked heck of dangerous to me. Way to go. You know, I know there's some strong, brave people that will do beams on a ladder by themselves and things. I've been on job sites like that as well, you know, where you just don't have the hands that you need. But some of the places that I'm talking about, to amass such wealth and have it be reflected that you would put your feet back and scoff at God and build a second barn to house more than you could ever use. Is it possible to build a structure that big by yourself? To till all that land by yourself? To be so bountiful all alone? As we challenge capitalism, it's one of the ideals of capitalism is individualism. It makes us feel so cut off from our communities that the only things that we do is get up in the morning and go to work and come home, go to work, come home, go to work, come home. And your family falls either stronger or further apart because we become individuals instead of a tribe. These are just things to think about. I'm just not telling you what to think. I'm just giving you things to think about differently. King starts to talk about Marian Anderson, the singer, and her career. And, you know, just how she honored her mother when she was asked what her proudest moment was in life after everything she had achieved. You know, and King says, don't forget those who help you come over. And one day somebody asked Marian Anderson in her later years, Miss Anderson, what has been the happiest moment of your life? Was it the moment that you had your debut in Carnegie Hall in New York? She said, no, that wasn't it. Was it the moment you stood before the kings and queens of Europe? No, that wasn't it. Well, Miss Anderson, was it the moment that Sibelius of Finland declared that his roof was too low for such a voice? No, that wasn't it. Miss Anderson, was it the moment that Toscanini said that a voice like yours comes only once in a century? No, that wasn't it. What was it then, Miss Anderson? And she looked up and said quietly, the happiest moment in my life was the moment that I could say, Mother, you can stop working now. Marian Anderson realized that she was where she was because somebody helped her get there. And, you know, King talks about Marian Anderson's mother washing dishes and working in kitchens so strenuously with chapped hands and seared eyebrows. And, you know, Marian Anderson looking up at her mother like that and understanding, as her mother expressed, I don't mind doing this so that you can have a better life. And then Marian Anderson went on to lift up Black people all over the world. So, you know, this person had all this wealth and thinks that they got it by themselves. That was rule number two that Dr. King thought made him a fool. The man said he did not know what to do with his goods. He had so many. Oh, I wish I could have advised him. A lot of places to go, and there were a lot of things that could be done. There were hungry stomachs that needed to be filled. There were empty pockets that needed access to money. America today, my friends, is so rich in goods. We have our barns, and every day our rich nation is building new and larger and greater barns. You know, we spend millions of dollars a day to store surplus food. But I want to say to America, I know where you can store that food free of charge. In the wrinkled stomachs of the millions of God's children in Asia and Africa and South America and in our own nation who go to bed hungry at night. Finally, Dr. King goes on, this man was a fool because he failed to realize his dependence on God. Do you know that this man talked like he regulated the seasons? That man talked like he gave the rain to grapple with the fertility of the soil. That man talked like he provided the dew. He was a fool because he ended up acting like he was the creator instead of a creature. And this man-centered foolishness is still alive today. And King goes on to talk about how many people say God is dead. I was watching a thing yesterday. It was saying that there was like a poll done on where people stood with Christianity, and it's like 25% lower than it was 10 years ago or something like this. And I think that people should find faith wherever they can find it. Whatever helps you get through this harsh reality, if it doesn't hurt anyone else, and if it's not hurting you, who cares what you call your moral compass, right? And as we look at traditional religions and spirituality and where colonization and capitalism are separate from these things, is the connectedness to the earth, okay? That's the part about the hubris, that comes along with God and nature is I don't really understand where the people who run these corporations that have this short-sighted vision of economy and goods and products, and even those among us here who are consumers of things, we don't think all the way forward thinking about when I buy this item and it expires, what am I going to do with it? And what's the earth going to do with it? There's a lack of forethought that comes along with the way that our system is run right now. That is bad for the planet. It's bad for future generations. So I'm suspicious about a system that is so short-sighted. All of the water that is used for agriculture and chemical industries. Companies know where the pitfalls are in the way of monocropping and doing things in this very short-sighted way, but they're more concerned about a quick buck. And that brings me back to Project 2025. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about that this month so that people can understand what you're voting for. But some of the values around rolling back environmental protections, rolling back certain government oversight organizations that have to do with public services, conservation. I don't understand where they think the earth, where are their children going to live on the next terraformed planet? That's all I can see, you know, or maybe some of the reserves and compounds, but you can't escape it. The water needs love. The trees need love. And we can't keep poisoning our systems like this. The more people we bomb, that stuff is going up into the air, is going into the ocean. I mean, the whole thing is just unsustainable at this scale, at this point. So Jada, what can I do? Hearts and minds, y'all. They keep saying it's hearts and minds. It's hearts and minds. Talk back. Speak truth to power. Stand up. Don't be afraid. Dr. King says, you see, as long as love is around, God is alive. As long as justice is around, God is alive. There are certain conceptions of God that need to die, but not God. You see, God is the supreme noun of life. He is not in adjectives. He is the supreme subject of life. And King begins to say, it doesn't really matter if you have theological words to express or philosophical words to express how you feel about the eternal nature of that energy that is love within us and the highest consciousness of ourselves. Some people have become so involved in looking at the skyscraping buildings of cities that they've forgotten to think about the gigantic mountains kissing the skies as if to bathe their peaks in the lofty blue, something that man could never make. Some people have become so involved in televisions and radar that they've forgotten to think about the beautiful stars that bedeck the heavens like swinging lanterns of eternity, standing there like shining silvery pins sticking in the magnificent blue pincushion, something that man could never make. Some people have come to feel that on their own efforts they can bring in a new world, but they've forgotten to think about the fact that the earth is the Lord's and fullness thereof. So, one day, they'll realize it's all temporary, and the only way for our species to survive is by coming together with each other and the planet. I'm going to wrap up. I'm Dream Queen. We've been reading from A Knock at Midnight, inspiration from the great sermons of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. This week's sermon for the book club is called Why Jesus Called a Man a Fool. King's final thoughts in this sermon were about faith. And as many of y'all know, if you follow this show, I have crises of faith quite often because everything seems so overwhelming and like the plug's going to get pulled on us all and none of it makes any sense anyway. But Dr. King, you know, he always helps me bring it back around. And he talks in this sermon about how he, like I opened the show saying, he was born into the ministry. And I know that when you're born into it from a lineage, see, he says that, of course, I was religious. I grew up in the church. I'm the son of a preacher. I'm the great grandson of a preacher. And the great, great grandson of a preacher. My father is a preacher. My grandfather was a preacher. My great grandfather was a preacher. My only brother is a preacher. My daddy's brother is a preacher. So I didn't have much choice, I guess. Right. And it's interesting to how to balance as a spiritual person. What's a calling and what's a lineage thing? What is thrust upon you because you grew up in an environment? And we all have to find that still voice within us. That will tell us what we feel our purpose, one of our many, all of our purposes are in this earth, right? And so Dr. King begins to say that he had grown up in the church and the church meant something very real, but it was an inherited religion. And at his young age of 25, I had never felt an experience with God in the way that you must have it if you're going to walk the lonely paths of this life. Everything was done, and if I had a problem, I could always call Daddy, my earthly father. Things were solved, okay? And he describes himself as being privileged. Privileged with an education, privileged with a loving family, privileged with structure and a loving community. And being called to the ministry, it is a difficult path. It's very difficult. And so he, as he just said, you know, he felt he could say, okay, you know, I don't know every aspect of God, but if I need anything, I'm secure. And then he talks about beginning his work in the civil rights movement. And one day after finishing school, I was called to a little church down in Montgomery, Alabama, and I started preaching there. Things were going well in that church. It was a marvelous experience. But one day, a year later, a lady by the name of Rosa Parks decided she wasn't going to take it any longer. She stayed in a bus seat. And you may not remember it. It's way back several years now, but it was the beginning of a movement where 50,000 Black men and women refused absolutely to ride the city buses. And we walked together for 381 days. That's what we got to learn in the North. Negroes have to learn to stick together. And we stuck together, right? And then he talks about the Montgomery bus boycotts. Things were going well for the first few days, but then about 10 or 15 days later, after the white people in Montgomery knew that we meant business, they started doing some nasty things. They started making nasty telephone calls, and it came to the point that some days more than 40 telephone calls would come in, threatening my life, the life of my family, the lives of my children. I took it for a while in a strong manner. But I will never forget one night very late. It was around midnight. And you can have some strange experiences at midnight. I had been out meeting with the steering committee all that night, and I came home and my wife was in the bed, and I immediately crawled into bed to get some rest. And immediately the telephone started ringing and I picked it up. And on the other end was an ugly voice. And the voice said to me in substance, blank. We are tired of you and your mess now, and if you aren't out of this town in 3 days, we're going to blow your brains out and blow up your house. And we all know what happened. There were multiple home bombings later, right? And I don't know if this is King's premonition or what, but he said, I'd heard these things before, but for some reason that night it got to me. And I turned over and I couldn't sleep. and I started to thinking about many things. I pulled back on the theology and philosophy that I had just studied in the universities, trying to give philosophical and theological reasons for the existence and the reality of sin and evil, but the answer didn't quite come there. I sat there and thought about a beautiful little daughter who had just been born about a month earlier. We have 4 children now, but we only had 1 then. She's the darling of my life. I'd come in night after night and see that little gentle smile, and I sat at that table thinking about that little girl and thinking about the fact that she could be taken away from me any minute. And I started thinking about a dedicated, devoted, and loyal wife who was over there asleep, and she could be taken from me, or I could be taken from her. And I got to the point that I couldn't take it any longer. I was weak. Something said to me, "You can't call on Daddy now. He's up in Atlanta, 175 miles away. You can't call on Mama now. You've got to call on that something in that person that your daddy used to tell you about. That power that can make a way out of no way." And I discovered then that religion had to become real to me, and I had to know God for myself. And I bowed down over that cup of coffee, and I never will forget it. And I prayed a prayer, and I prayed out loud that night. I said, "Lord, I'm down here trying to do what's right. I think I'm right. I think the cause that we represent is right. But Lord, I must confess that I'm weak now. I'm faltering. I'm losing my courage. And I can't let the people see me like this, because if they see me weak and losing my courage, they will begin to get weak. And I wanted tomorrow morning to be able to go before the executive board with a smile on my face." And it seemed at that moment that I could hear an inner voice saying to me, "Martin Luther, stand up for righteousness. Stand up for justice. Stand up for truth. And lo, I will be with you unto the end of the world." And Dr. King did just that. And even though he was taken away from his family and the rest of us, he was a brave martyr who still continues to inspire, and they will not dim his light or the light of peace that we must continue to hold. I love you all. I'm Dream Queen. You've been in the cab with me, listening to KMRD. Stay strong. Stay positive. Keep your head up.